Not every law is the handiwork of lawmakers. Take Sayre's Law, a maxim credited to the late political scientist Wallace Sayre. It goes something like this. University politics are so vicious precisely because the stakes are so low. So how is Sayre's 20th century law holding up in this, the 21st century? Well, there's no doubt about the first half of the sentence. It remains valid. The politics associated with higher education are indeed ferocious, perhaps more so than ever. But that part about the stakes being low? Not by a long shot. Higher education is now at or near the heart of almost every conversation about our nation's future in an increasingly complex and competitive world. The stakes, it seems, couldn't be any higher for higher education, for those who seek it, sometimes at any price, and for those charged with delivering it, ideally at an affordable price. Hi, I'm John Chwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll look at the highly charged world of higher education, starting, as always, with a legislative update from Brittany Muncy of thestatehousefile.com, a service of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism.
The state wants to encourage students to graduate college in 4 years or less, and lawmakers are considering whether to use popular scholarship programs to make it happen. Bills passed by the House would force students to stay on track to graduate or risk losing their 21st century and Franco-Bannon scholarships. Representative Tom Dermody of LaPorte says the state needs more college graduates.
We need to change something and put the accountability not only on the university, but also on the student to make them realize that they need to, when they go to college, they need to get in and get out in 4 years.
Only about one quarter of students who receive state scholarships now graduate in 4 years. So the legislation would require universities to do a better job telling students what classes they need to graduate on time. Advocates say that will not only be good for the state, but for the students as well.
Student debt is a real concern for students, as well as for universities. We want our students to enter the workforce as quickly as they can, as well prepared as they can, and not to be burdened with any additional debt. So if there are small changes that we can make or that the students can make to get done a semester early and on time for 4 years or even 3.5 years, good for them, and they can enter the workforce and start earning and not be saddled with more debt.
For Indiana Lawmakers and thestatehousefile.com, I'm Brittany Muncy.
Thanks, Brittany. Back in a moment with our weekly roundtable discussion. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Park. 4 locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
After a stint as White House political director, several tours of duty as a top corporate executive, and most recently 2 terms as Indiana's governor, Mitch Daniels finally made it to the center ring of bare-knuckle politics, higher education. Daniels, who's about to enter his 3rd month as president of Purdue University, came out swinging last week by promising that students on the school's West Lafayette campus will see their tuition costs frozen for at least 2 years, regardless of what the General Assembly does with the school's 2-year state funding request. The preemptive strike has folks buzzing not only at Purdue, but also at the state's other public universities and, as you might imagine, at the State House. Here to talk about college affordability and accountability, as well as a few other campus-related issues, are Republican Senator Jim Banks of Columbia City, a high-profile member of the Senate Education and Career Development Committee, Democratic Representative Sheila Klinker of Lafayette, the Assistant Whip of the House Democratic Caucus, and in her day job, Outreach Liaison for the Purdue University School of Education, former State Senator Teresa Lubbers, who spent 17 years in the General Assembly before resigning her seat in 2009 to become Indiana's Commissioner for Higher Education, and Sandra Doran, President of Indianapolis-based American College of Education, a private for-profit graduate school that offers what it describes as some of the most relevant and affordable master's degrees in the country. And I welcome all of you to this discussion.
Thank you.
Teresa Lubbers, you're 4 years into your new gig, as it were. This year, for the first time back at the coinciding with the start of the session, you gave the State of Higher Education in Indiana address to a statewide televised audience. Why now? What do you want people to take away from that speech?
Well, thank you for asking. Yes, we did, and we thought the timing was especially appropriate because it fit between what had been in the fall a state of K-12, and then just a couple weeks before the governor gave the State of the State address. And the reason why we thought it was an especially important is because we see higher education as the link really between K-12 and economic development and the issues that the governor was going to talk about as well. We also think it indicates the increasing value that people are placing on higher education, and you can see it in the State House every year now as we see more and more issues related to higher education. And it gave us the opportunity to talk about our new return on investment report, which really talks about value related to higher education.
Well, there does seem to be a very direct connection now between job development, economic development, which everybody says is job one, and higher education. Certainly we've seen the proposed workforce councils, which will work with vocational programs across the state to try to prepare people for the kinds of jobs and training that I guess they need in the 21st century. But there are all kinds of bills related to higher education, and in fact, Senator Banks, last month you had a news conference with Dennis Cruz, who's the chairman of the Senate Education and Career Development Committee, to announce that you were doing something, I guess, that the committee had never done before, which is devote an entire hearing to higher education bills. Because simply volume, or what was the logic
part
there?
Of it. So many bills, it's hard to keep track of all of them. But a number of them that are substantive steps toward trying to rein in the cost of higher education, but also to hold our public, especially our public universities, more accountable for the public investment that we make as taxpayers and as legislators involved in that arena. So we did. We devoted an entire committee hearing. It became a priority for, I don't think it was at the beginning it was meant to be, but it eventually became a priority for the Senate Republican caucus to take this on as an issue in the first half of the session. And we passed six or seven different bills, ranging from issues of empowering our regional campuses and trying to do more to cut some of the ties and bureaucracy that they have with their parent campuses so they have more autonomy to grow and make decisions on their own. That's an issue that we took a look at, to finishing what we started last year with the credit transfer process, which ultimately will create a more affordable path for Hoosier students to go to college and save a significant amount of money by getting an associate's degree first and counting that toward two full years
of their four-year degree. And this would effectively ensure that those credits do, in fact, carry forward to that bachelor's degree. And then the accountability. Is it, just as an aside, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but given that the state support of higher education, public higher education, continues to drop on the percentage of overall cost, is it harder to keep schools accountable? I mean, it used to be that state funding made up what? Three-fourths or more, and now it's in most cases less than 50%.
But it's still substantial. We still make a significant public investment in our colleges. And as taxpayers, as legislators, we should have an expectation that the universities provide something of significant value to the state in return. And I'm alarmed by, if you look over the past decade, tuition and fees at our colleges have doubled. Indiana ranks 40th. In the country for the amount of student debt load that our students carry when they leave college. These are alarming figures, all the while as policymakers, as those of us who are trying to create better economic development in our state are trying to force and push more students toward acquiring a degree of higher education, and we simply can't afford it at those rates.
And one other stat, I guess, that's gotten some attention this session that perhaps is alarming is, I guess, only two states in the country, and correct me if I'm wrong, have fewer, on a percentage basis, residents with no post-secondary education, I guess, which, again, sort of fits into this notion that we need to ramp up in that regard and make it more accessible and more affordable. You've been following these issues for a long time, both in your day job and in the job you hold either 2 or 4 months a year, as you have for the past three decades. There does seem to be a real flurry of education, higher education-related bills this session. I know you've been pushing, for instance, for more access for veterans, returning veterans, those with disabilities. But this overall theme seems to be accessibility and affordability.
Well, I like the Career Development Council that's going to be prevalent. That's something new that Governor Pence is looking at. But I do want to mention that our universities are a great deal. They have been compared to...
Even if they've gone up, as Senator Banks said,
well, actually, my son-in-law came to landscape architecture at Purdue University cheaper than he could go in-state to the University of Illinois. So sometimes when we're talking about this, we do have to understand that it's still a pretty good deal here in Indiana. And our, because of tuition going up, actually, the state has been providing fewer dollars. And in fact, there was a recent article that Commissioner Lovers and I were looking at. We've gone down about 35% in our actual funding, 9% in 1 year, as far as the state giving dollars to the universities. So the only way they felt they could retain and recruit good faculty members was through tuition increases, plus the students I know at Purdue University chose to have a little accommodation for their new recreational center, and they suggested
that, what, $90-some dollars a year in additional
fees.
That's
right, and the students came to Indianapolis to actually lobby us to do that. So there is a give and take here, John, and I think that the universities are really trying hard. I'm delighted that they're not licensing teachers from the College of Education, that they've decided to go back to the Department of Education. I think that's important to have one place where licensure is very important. And I do think that administrators and superintendents should be licensed also. Of course, I've gone back to school several times to get that licensure.
And have,
so I think
another part of your career has been in
right.
education
right.
at the secondary level.
That's
as well.
Exactly right.
Sandra Dorn, as you sit here and you hear about all these bills related to the state's public universities and colleges, I suppose you're reminded, one, you don't have a dog in the fight, but in another way, I guess you do, because what happens at Purdue and Ball State and Indiana, does it in a very way, real way affect you?
Well, we are completely focused, as is everyone here, on accessibility and affordability for students. Our college provides master's and doctorate degrees for teachers, professional
and that's
educators.
It. That is the sole
professional
focus.
Educators. Will you also provide degrees for some folks in technology if they're interested in educational technology? And in terms of our doctorate, we have a broader reach. We don't offer just an educational a degree in EDD, a degree in educational leadership, but a degree in leadership. And the reason we've done that is because we recognize that our communities are really struggling in terms of how to solve problems. So this degree is focused on not just folks in education, but folks in chambers of commerce, boys and girls clubs, NGOs, other nonprofits, because one of our foci here is to gather the data, bring people together who can solve some of these big problems that we're talking about in terms of education. We are very focused on accessibility, and accessibility in terms of not just affordability, but accessibility via technology. We really see technology as the future to greater efficiencies in education.
And it's all online, your degree.
It's all online, and we don't accept Title IV, so we feel very proud that we're not contributing to the student debt load issue that we're all struggling with.
So online, relevant, as you say, dealing
yep.
with real world leadership issues and so forth.
Exactly.
And then you talk about the affordability, which, if I was reading correctly on your website, less than $7,000?
Less than $8,000, yes,
less
exactly.
Than 8,000.
Exactly. Now, we do offer a $1,000 grant to all Hoosiers, who are interested in taking advantage of our programs, because we are so committed to that relevancy, applicability, accessibility, affordability that we've been talking about.
Well, when you hear about private institution, for-profit institution that puts a premium on affordability and accessibility and ease, let me ask the rest of you, is that seen as part of the solution or part of the problem? I mean, is that seen as competition that could take dollars and talent away from our research institutions in the state, the nonprofits, or is that, I mean, is that not a...
More competition in this marketplace mm-hmm. is what we need.
I think it's a very good step forward, because our universities are doing that now, too.
Right.
And competition.
And we view it as not just competition, but as complementary. So, for example, there is not a one-size-fits-all in terms of education.
Right.
You know, for teachers in particular, they have very demanding jobs. You know, they're up at 6, they're in their classrooms at 7, they spend the entire day at school, then they go home right. and correct papers, lesson plans. Sheila, you know, you've been a teacher.
That's true.
And
that's
so right. for them, it is particularly valuable not to have to drive to a college campus, but to be able to learn on their time.
I think it's important to remember what a lot of Hoosiers don't know, and that is that only 1 out of 5 people who access higher education today ever live on a college campus.
That's That's right.
We still are having enrollment growth in our more traditional schools, but we are flooding higher education with people who never actually considered higher education before. And that means we need to have all kinds of new options. We need to meet the student need. We need to think about how the student gets a higher education credential. And that means we need to have lots of different options. I mean, WGU Indiana is a great example. You have the average age of someone at WGU Indiana is 37.
Which is Western Governor's University.
Yes, it's all competency-based. So I think what you're seeing is all higher education enterprises are changing. The delivery of higher education in the 21st century looks very different.
I agree. And I think it's really important to look at it from the student perspective. So if you are the student, there are some very critical metrics you need to look at. What is the graduation rate of the institution that you're going to? Again, what are some of the student debt loads? We don't accept Title IV, but other people do. That's a very important metric if you're a student. What's the retention rate? Right? How many people stay in the program and go through the program, and how long does it take them to go through the program? And one statistic that we are completely focused on is what we call our employer survey. So every year in the fall, we send out a survey to the employers, of our students, which are principals and superintendents, saying, how are our students performing in your classroom? Do you see a greater impact on their students? And 95% of our employers come back saying that they do. So if I'm a student, those are the kinds of metrics I would be really focused on.
That reminds me of one of the bills that we haven't talked about much, but the expansion, you might say, of work-study programs where you actually try to connect students with sort of the real world through internships that would be funded in part by the state. Again, all of these ideas of getting people in the classroom, either, I guess, in physical sense or in a virtual sense.
John, that's a great idea, but when this goes back to trying to get students out in 4 years. If you're in biomedical engineering or veterinary science or pharmacy, you do go out into the real workaday world, and sometimes you can't graduate in 4 years. But there is a push to get these students, because of debt load and other reasons, in the university and out.
We think far more of them can graduate on time, and the legislature has helped us by making sure that you can graduate in 4 years and 120 credit hours now with what you need for a four-year degree,
that's
not
right.
130. Well, so there are lots of ways to get people out on time, and we need to do that because the extra year of college we have figured costs about $50,000.
Well, I will say at IU, I did get done in four, if you count the, they didn't have online back then, of course.
That's
but,
right.
But there was a correspondence course, I think, in meteorology or something that got me over the hump. So
it took me eight years.
See, well, that is one question I wanted. We talk about 4 years, and there's this push, again, from the commission, to get people in and out. Dumb question. I remember back to freshman orientation at IU, and they said, how many of you know what you want to do and what you want to major in? Everybody, they said, well, you're wrong, because 2.8 times on average you'll change your mind. Well, isn't college the chance where you go and explore, and if we have degree mapping programs where you know exactly what you're going to do for 4 years, does it take away the serendipity of being in around bright people with bright ideas that might lead you in a direction you never imagined?
Well, there's no question that the university is going to do a better job of graduating students on time, and that's what's exciting for me, even being an IU guy, even to see what Governor Daniels is going to accomplish and really turn things upside down at Purdue to adapt to the higher education marketplace in a way that no public university has even attempted at this point. What we see, we talk about graduating on time, you see the graduation figures at our private institutions across the state of Indiana who do graduate their students on time almost twice as much as the public universities. And I think you're going to see something happen at Purdue that will be a push toward that in a way we haven't seen at the other public universities in our state.
Well, let's focus on Mitch Daniels for a moment with this announcement last week, something I'm sure you'd like to talk about, given your ties to Purdue. Again, as I look at some of the clips around the country, several presidents at institutions have said, we'll do it for a year, but 2 years really seems to be an attention grabber. And Teresa Lubbers, you actually, I saw, were quoted as saying it's a game changer.
Well, it provides predictability in terms of cost to students and families, and that's very important. And you're seeing other models of this as well. IU looked at if you're on time to graduate on time, they have frozen tuition for your junior and senior year. We have some of our private colleges we were talking about, one of them that actually provided a decrease in tuition. I mean, this is in response to the fact that we cannot continue to sustain year after year 6%, 7%, 8% increases in tuition, and at the same time, as Senator Banks said, tell more and more people we need them to go into higher education, but if they can't afford it, or if they leave with now an average of $27,000 in debt, they're digging themselves out of a pretty deep hole. So this is all about building a student-centered system of higher education that responds to student need.
And the state is willing to really give more money toward higher education this year, too. And they were going to pay cash for the infrastructure and R&R.
Which is certainly a departure from anything we've seen for a number of years.
But also the investment in higher ed that Commissioner Levers was talking about is much higher this year than before, because we've been losing as a state. As tuition has increased, the state has given less, 9% in 1 year, 35% over a period of years. So I'm delighted that we're willing to invest from the state level so that we can have frozen tuition, because we want to retain and recruit our good faculty.
Right. You know, we talk about student-centered, we talk about the needs. It almost sounds, Sandra Dorn, as if the public side of the equation has borrowed a page from the playbook of for-profit education and more inclined to run it as a business. Is that a fair assessment?
It does sound that way. I think there's a lot we can learn from each other, frankly. I don't think it's one size fits all. I think that the better universities do learn from each other. And we learn from our counterparts, and we hope that they learn from us. One of the things that I think we are completely focused on, though, is this graduation rate. 83% of our students graduate on time within their program, and that is unheard of in higher education, frankly.
And you think it's because of the ease of online coursework, or is it? What's the lesson that could be learned?
I think it's the dedication of our students and the understanding that as they work through their coursework and the rigor of their coursework, that they are professionals that need a credential and that are looking to enhance their skills because they are lifelong learners. So we provide them the support to enable them to get through their program appropriately.
And they're all on education. They're all focused on education.
Mm-hmm. Which they've been through that discovery process we talked about earlier, and maybe
exactly.
have that portion of it out of the way.
Exactly.
I mean, so we've heard a lot of different, as we wrap up, I can't believe we're almost out of time, but as we wrap up, we've talked about the ease of transfer credits. We've talked about accountability and spreading the wealth to other institutions. You know, Ivy Tech is celebrating its 50th anniversary.
That's right. I saw
you got an award last week from them. Of all these things, what's the one thing, do you think? Real quick, what's the one thing that Indiana needs to do to improve higher education?
Continue to pay attention to the alarming rise in cost and adapt. I mean, that's a simple answer, but continue.
Simple answers are welcome, especially when we're running out of time.
And I think funding for the universities and for the state, along with the freezing of tuition, you have to be willing to invest in higher ed.
Teresa Lovers?
For us, it's a focus on completion, making sure that students complete, and that means that college will be more affordable.
And I would say it's embracing technology, because that allows more student-centric learning as well as greater efficiencies for the university.
All right, very good. I didn't get to ask you about your basketball team, though. With the tournament coming up, we'll get that later. I appreciate all of you being here for this discussion of higher education. Certainly an important topic, and I say that as someone who has three teenagers in the House aiming in that direction themselves. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator Jim Banks of Columbia City, Democratic Representative Sheila Klinker of Lafayette, Teresa Lubbers, Indiana's Commissioner for Higher Education, and Sandra Doran, President of Indianapolis-based American College of Education. From meth labs to prescription drugs to medical marijuana, we're talking drugs on the next Indiana Lawmakers. No prescription necessary. Time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. You know, Ed, when Mitch Daniels was first, his hiring was announced, there were protests among some faculty members and some students said it wasn't right to bring somebody like that into the academy. Now, with this announcement of 2 years worth of frozen tuition, are they going to be rallying in his favor this time? Teresa Lubbers called it a game changer. Is it a big deal?
Well, I think the students and the parents are certainly applauding the move now, but you also look at what's happening around the state, and other universities are raising their tuition still. Valparaiso went up by 4.something% for next year, but at the same time as well, Ancilla College in North Central Indiana just lowered their tuition by 4.something% for the next academic year. So a freeze now may be more of what we can expect as the new normal, as opposed to an increase, but people are even starting to look at decreases now. Well, what's really interesting about this, John, is that it's almost like a technology-forcing move, like when President Nixon said, well, let's lower the emissions on vehicles by whatever date, and the automaker said, well, we don't have the technology to do it. And he said, well, you're going to have to do it. Or President Obama said, you're going to lower or increase the mileage for your vehicles. Well, we don't have the technology to do it. Well, you're going to do it. And we don't know how Purdue is going to, you know, make up that money gap, but in some way,
$40 million worth of gap,
and they're,
right?
They're going to have to do it now. And it may also mean a game changer for the state and for the budget for Purdue and the other institutions, the state institutions in the legislature, because one of the things that he can do is look at bringing in more international students that will be paying out-of-state rates, and Purdue has a huge international population. There are different ways to do this without necessarily even cutting the budget.
Do some lawmakers who have been calling for modest increases or, you know, in the best case scenario, a freeze, do they reward Purdue? Is that part of the psychological game here, or for their preemptive move?
Well, there may be some legislators that are looking to do something like that, but again, they have to see what the full impact is going to be. It could be that by bringing in more out-of-state students or international students, that freezes out Hoosier students, and there may be a big protest from legislators because the parents of these kids are telling them they can't get their kids into their state institutions.
So politics is alive and well on the college campus. Very good. Ed, we have to leave it there. Thank you, as always, for your insight. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Chwanis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and thestatehousefile.com, I thank you for tuning in and invite you to join us again at the same time next week. Until then, take care.
The idea economy is here at the Purdue Research Park. A powerful economic engine and a technology conduit from Chicago to Louisville. Purdue Research Park, the idea economy is here.